Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Thursday morning. It's April 23rd. We've got cloudy skies, 39 degrees, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, Erica Martin. Good morning to you, Erica.
Good morning, Lindsay. So today we're going to see a couple of sprinkles moving through. The good news is, while we can always use rain showers, this troth is sticking on down. It's not going to be anything drastic, so we're not expecting downpours for today, but we'll see a couple of sprinkles out there isolated. Highs in the low 50s, overnight lows, we're going to keep it in the low 30s, so right below the freezing mark. So I do think that any kind of precip that we do have lingering will change over, but honestly, this little trough that's sticking on down is moisture deficient, so we're just seeing at most just scattered. Friday, mostly sunny skies, and then for the weekend, sunny skies in the works, a high of 59 degrees. Overnight low is going to be in the mid-30s, and then on Sunday, this is something that I've been tracking for the past couple of days as models kind of just align themselves. I did want to add increasing clouds, and I talked about that yesterday, so today we're going to go ahead and add threat of a spot shower. Even though temperatures are climbing, we're going to see mid-60s by Sunday, overnight lows close to 40. We are going to see a scattered shower moving through early and then clearing. Now we have mostly sunny skies on Monday, and it's going to be really nice and warm, a high of 65 degrees. From there on out, we're going to see temperatures climbing until we hit 72 on Wednesday. So a very nice forecast overall. Be aware that as temperatures start to climb, make sure you drink plenty of water and wear that sunscreen often.
Okay. Hey, thank you. It sounds like a great
thank you. Bye-bye.
Forecast. KPCW News Time now, 8:07.
This KPCW weather report is brought to you in part by Deer Valley Resort, deervalley.com.
And stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright with a recap from yesterday's meeting and Tuesday's Coffee with Council. Todd Halber is Park City School District's business administrator. He'll be on the phone later to talk about the budget as well as some other school district issues. And finally, the owner of Park City Lodging and a member of the Park City Lodging Association, Rhonda Sedaris, with an update and on how hard hit that industry has been and what the plans may be to begin to reopen nightly rentals. Stay tuned. And stay tuned also. Coming up after the local news hour, it's a rebroadcast of Cool Science Radio. Today's guests include Dr. Kelly McGonigal. Her book is The Joy of Movement, a love letter to movement and exploration of what is most human about us. Then Park City's own Shark Chaser, Chris Fisher, founder and expedition leader of OSearch, his company a recognized world leader in generating critical scientific data related to tracking and studying great white sharks. Taking a look first at some local news, the Park Silly Sunday Market announced yesterday that it has canceled the 2020 season. The market featuring, of course, hundreds of local vendors and runs from June to mid-September on Park City's Main Street. There's also a farmer market, musicians, and street performers. The market, of course, has been one of Park City's biggest tourist draws during the summertime. According to a statement on the Park Silly Facebook page, market organizers said that they had been consulting with Summit County Health Department, vendors, and guests, and came to the conclusion that due to COVID-19, quote, prioritizing the health and welfare of the community is the only decision that makes sense this year, unquote. Park Silly Sunday Market organizers saying they're looking forward to holiday bazaars in Camas and Park City this December, and Silly Sunday's return to Old Town Park City in the summer of 2021. Summit County Council members yesterday were briefed on round two of adjustments to their budget for 2020 in response to the economic impacts from the coronavirus outbreak and lockdown. KPCW's Rick Bruff reports that Chief Financial Officer Matt Levitt detailed the cuts to the budget, now totaling some $7.1 million.
Levitt and County Manager Tom Fisher told the council that they've made some $5 million in spending cuts for the county's operation. In addition, Levitt said the county health department did not receive some $2.1 million in grants it had applied for. The county manager clarified that the funds for substance abuse and mental health treatment will be spent locally, but the money went directly to service providers rather than go through the county. The budget cuts included a hiring freeze and up to 30 vacant positions at the county, not going through with some Class B road projects, not making a contribution this year to their fund balance, and cutbacks on materials, supplies, and trips for staffers. During the budget discussion, Fisher also referred to this summer's county fair. He said it's going to be a lot different from the traditional event at Colville City Park.
At best, we're going to be modifying the fair tremendously. I don't know exactly what that means yet, but I think it's going to be greatly reduced as far as having public events. A lot of things are going to move virtual that still need to get done in regards to the fair. We'll know more in the next week.
Councilmember Kim Carson said she wants to retain the agricultural events for county youngsters.
I think it's really important that we figure out some way to continue the livestock show in some capacity. It may look very different, you know, over a course of a few weeks. Maybe you do individual events at a time instead of kind of having everybody there at once, and do it via the bidding via video, or, you know, have it.
Yeah, the 4-H type events, probably there is a virtual solution to that, plus the animal set, animal sale at the end. And yeah, I know people are already talking about that.
I know that money is incredibly important to those kids. A lot of them, that's their college fund.
Fisher said the customary events that draw large crowds likely won't take place.
Although those are culturally very important to our county, under the current conditions and what we know about what's coming for the rest of the summer, probably are not going to be allowed. And so we're going to have to rethink that. Anyway, we've already got people working on it.
Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. The budget changes will come back to County Council for a vote at their meeting on April 29th. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins with Keller Williams Real Estate. I love our great community and all the amazing nonprofits that make it the fantastic place it is. And it's a pleasure to support the KPCW Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher to stay up to date on the critical issues facing our community, as well as the human interest stories that are the heartbeat of our town. Real estate information, jhparkcity.com.
8:13 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we reported the council meeting, Summit County Council meeting yesterday, planning another round of budget cuts. On the phone with an update, Summit County Council member Glenn Wright. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the cuts now total up to $7.1 million. What's your reaction? County Manager Tom Fisher mentioning that if the revenue projections become even worse, the county could take additional measures.
Yeah, we're seeing a pretty significant downturn in the local economy. Unemployment is looks like it's going to be up. We don't have an accurate picture of it yet, but we're anticipating some fairly severe revenue losses. I think the $7 million figure we received yesterday looks like a pretty reasonable effort right now. The good part is that about $2 million of it is really pass-through money on health programs that will go directly to providers now. So essentially, it won't result in a loss of service to county residents. It just won't pass through our budget. But $5 million is a pretty big hit. I think the good news is we can do it with anticipated turnover and only filling positions strategically, and with putting off merit raise increases for the next year, and cutting some projects. We don't have a complete picture of what that will result in terms of loss, reduction in services. I'm anticipating in the report that we receive from Tom next week, we'll see some reduction in construction projects. The sales taxes that we receive on transportation taxes, some of those have been bonded for, so those projects will go forward. But about half of the funds we receive every year are what we call pay-as-you-go projects. So if those funds don't come in, and if some of those funds need to be used to fund the bonds, then those projects won't occur. So those are some of the sort of things we're anticipating in next week's discussion on where the cuts will come in.
So what if we do get to the point of dipping into the rainy day fund? Will the county council consider letting some employees go, or do you ask for a tax increase?
That's something we have to, we'll deal with down the road. Right now, we think this will take us through the next few months. By the time we get to the end of the summer, we'll see better where our sales tax and fee revenues are going. We have various fund balances and various funds, municipal fund and the general purpose fund are the biggest ones that we can tap just on our own volition. I think there's about $11 million in those funds. And then there's the tax stabilization fund, which is about $10 million, which we would have to have voter approval to tap into. I think at this point, we'd like to avoid tapping any of those funds until we see what next year's budget's going to look like. And at that point, we'll have to make a decision. How long can these fund balances last? Will we have to make additional cuts? Will normal turnover take care of some of the reduction in force? It's going to be a difficult budget time for us for probably the next 18 months.
Yeah. Let's see. You've got a fairly brief report from Deputy County Attorney Jamie Bracken with regard to the legislature special session. The council's major interest there was House Bill 3009, which would have allowed the county to use transit room tax and restaurant tax funds for COVID aid. Jamie said the bill was dropped by leadership because of some controversy over some entirely different provisions. Can you tell us what those were?
It was a very long bill, and I think that a couple of the biggest things that were in there that were very controversial. One was a provision that I think was going to be removed initially that would have required counties to reimburse closed businesses for lease costs, which essentially made closing businesses impossible. And the other one was a preemption of local health department authority to either open or close counties and put that completely in the hands of the governor. So those were provisions that were very controversial, and essentially the bill's dead. We think some of the better provisions will be inserted into some of the legislation that will be considered today and tomorrow and possibly in a future special session. From what Jamie told us, the legislature was receiving a lot of heat from some significant right-wing groups about the closing orders at all. And I think they wanted to put off any really controversial measures until after the state conventions this weekend.
Okay, so this isn't over yet. There's a chance for that to happen?
It's definitely not over yet. I believe they're in session today and tomorrow yet. And it's likely there will be another session called.
All right. Now, did this bill, does it also apply to RAP monies?
No monies that were initiated by the voter. But it was a little bit broader than just the TRT. It would have given us flexibility in moving around all of our fund balances and all of our revenue streams from various taxes for probably this a revenue year and the upcoming budget year. So there's some very good provisions in there that will help us get through the process. The intricacies of the county budget are interesting in that we have a lot of silos for our money. And money comes in from certain sources, and they have to be used in certain ways. And it's difficult to move things around between those sources without this provision that we might get from the legislature. So that'll help us if we start tapping into rainy day funds.
All right. Now, what's the county's position on Senate Bill 3007, which says that a shop or restaurant has blanket immunity if it were to reopen and somebody were to get sick?
We haven't really discussed that. I'll give you my personal opinion. I think that's an absurd provision, but we'll see where it goes.
Right. The council denied a property tax exemption to the Great Salt Lake Council for the Boy Scouts, which has three parcels of about 500 acres near the East Fork of the Bear River. The Scouts representative admitted that the tax issue had not been on their radar, and they had to submit an annual application for exemption, but missed it because they were busy with some staff and physical office changes. So was this a case of the dog ate my homework?
It's hard to say. That they were not the only ones that we denied. This one came to us yesterday as a kind of resubmission because they finally put in their application. But last week, you may remember, I think we denied about 9 of these for exactly the same reason. And I think our thinking was, yeah, we would have liked to help the Boy Scouts. But once we make an exception for them, then that opens the door on the other, all the other ones that we have denied. We did give all of these entities sufficient notice. They all received a warning letter at least a month ahead. And I think the Boy Scouts might have received another one 2 weeks before the deadline. So, you know, there's only a certain amount we can do if people, you know, can't take care of their end of the business.
Yeah. We were trying to identify the Scouts representative. Was it Tal Adair?
Yes, it was.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, Tal is on the board of the state Boy Scout Association.
All right. Let's see. On the county trash operations, plenty of food for thought here. So did the council pretty much give direction to Tim Loveday with Republic to your county manager that the option you're choosing is a new contract and not doing in-house?
Yes. Yeah, we did do that. It's turning out that going in-house would cost us a lot of money initially, and obviously with the budget issues we're going through now, that's really completely off the table. Tim tells us it would have cost us additional money for about 7 years until we completely paid for all the infrastructure we would have to purchase. And there might be reductions after that, but you never can tell. But there were also a lot of difficulties that we would face in operations. There were pluses and minuses. Having complete control of your own operation, having flexibility to change things as needed is good. But the hiring process, the workers' comp insurance, the liability insurance, all of those issues were really thorny potential issues that we couldn't put an exact dollar figure on. So we have asked Tim and Tom to go forward with an RFP, and I think the main decisions we're going to be making over the next month or so is exactly what optional provisions we want in the RFP. I think it's going to be a fairly complicated RFP, and we're going to reach out to potential providers to give us some options going forward.
So we have Republic Services. That's our current provider. How many others are out there to choose from?
Probably at least 2 others. I've heard the number 3 as a, as the universe of potential waste haulers.
Yeah. And I mean,
but, if you ever get told, next time you talk to Tom, ask him that question specifically.
Yeah. And again, I mean, bidding, it's a competitive process. Tim Loveday said that the contract now costing $3 million a year. Under a new contract, he says it would cost $3.6 million a year. That seems pretty hefty for a year's increase, or is that just over the life of the contract?
The contract we're on is 5 years old. Hmm. It did have some escalators in it, but we had a pretty favorable contract, and the escalators probably did not cover the actual increase in costs over that period of time. When looking at our monthly cost per can, we are actually paying less now than virtually anybody in the area.
All right. So what's the timeline on this to award a new contract?
Well, we want to get the RFP process out in September, October time frame. And we'd like to actually do the award, I'm trying to remember now, probably mid-next year, or the first part of next year, so that if it's a new, if it's Republic Services, they don't have any particular issues with getting them back up to speed. If it's a new carrier, a new hauler, they're going to have to buy additional trucks, hire additional drivers, various other things that are involved in essentially staging the process.
Would that be part of the rubric, so somebody who knows the territory?
We're going to try to award this contract at least 6 to 9 months before it actually goes into effect.
Okay. So how do we pay for it, especially given the budget impacts now of COVID? I mean, are we talking about a tax levy, increased garbage fees, or taking other money out of the general fund?
That's a decision we have to make over the next, within the 21 budget year. There are several options. Right now, we have a mixed revenue source. We have $40 a year fees to each a homeowner, which doesn't even close cover the expenses, and a massive subsidy from the general fund. We could continue to do that. We could up the fee. We could get rid of the fee and do a complete subsidy. One other option that we talked about really a couple of years ago was setting up a solid waste district for the entire county and having a separate mill levy on your taxes so people would see exactly what they're paying for in term each year for solid waste program.
And finally,
these are probably the three options we have in front of us.
All right. I finally wanted to ask you about how do we handle recycling given the current problems on the market?
And that's a big unknown, and that's why we're going to try to have options in the RFP process. Right now, the only viable recycling materials through a collection system are cardboard and metal. Paper and plastic, our recyclers will get rid of, but there's really no money in it. But that could change. That's why we're trying to put some flexibility in the RFP process for recycling. You know, one of the issues we may look at is will a new contract holder do a sorting facility here in Summit County for our recycling?
Okay. One interesting episode, the next step apparently is that one of two council members would confer with Tim Loveday over the next month. You kind of knocked head with council member Roger Armstrong about who works with Tim. You said you wouldn't be shut out, so are you the guy?
To be determined. You know, sometimes we get a little excited during our council meeting. I don't think there's any real issues here. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think the biggest thing I'd like to talk about is the stabilization plan and where that's going and the testing program we've had over the last week. Figures we got from the health department that in the last 7 days, we've had over 2,400 tests done in Summit County. 1,100 of them were actually yesterday at Ecker Hill. We don't have complete results on that testing yet, but the initial results from the first Friday and Saturday indicated we were down in a 2-3% positive range, which is a massive improvement over our previous results. The state average is in the around 5%, and we were actually averaging 20-30% initially. So that shows that our social distancing program has worked, and that's going to really be one of the key factors we're looking at in the new health orders. That we're going to have a health order that comes out May 1st. We don't know exactly what's going to be in it yet. We anticipate the stabilization plan will contemplate some level of opening in the month of May. All of those details are still to be determined, and our staff will be working hard on that next week. But the combination of the test results we're getting and the work from our staff and from volunteers in the community will help us on our next step forward. And really, I have to salute the residents of Summit County. We started off with the highest case rate in the state and one of the highest ones in the country. And getting our infection rate down to the 2-3% rate on testing has really been a major accomplishment for us. We will do some opening next month, but I think the entire population has to be wary. Do it carefully. Don't push the limits. Keep maintaining your social distance. And if we all do that, I think we'll have a successful, slow opening to the county. If we don't, we could be back where we were a few weeks ago.
Okay. Hey, Glenn, thanks for your time this morning.
You're welcome, Leslie.
Summit County Council Member Glenn Wright, you're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:31 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, with a lot of uncertainty about the economic impacts of the COVID virus, state legislature asking school districts to pause with their fiscal year 2021 budget plans. On the phone to recap the Park City School Board's budget discussion on Tuesday, I have School District Business Administrator Todd Halber. Good morning to you, Todd.
Good morning.
So for this fiscal year, apparently just 2.5 months left, and you have collected the majority of your revenues, so you're in good shape?
Yeah, we're looking pretty positive. We're good on the property tax front. The state legislature did not cut the FY20 budgets in their special session, so we're expecting regular distributions from the state for those dollars. We'll be a little bit tight on our fee-based programs, so our after-school food services, those types of programs, because we're not collecting revenues on those programs yet. We're maintaining all of our employees on payroll. So that'll be a little bit tight, but we should be able to come out of the school year just fine.
Okay. So where are we in next year's budget process?
So in next year's budget process, we're waiting for the legislature to reconvene in its special session and make some determinations on its appropriation adjustments. So as you recall, when they closed out the session just a couple months ago, they were looking at 6% on the weighted pupil unit. So that was the largest increase ever that the state has seen on the WPU. But now going into the special session, they're going to need to revise that as they look at the economic impact to the state. And there's some uncertainty there, so we're not sure what the increase will actually look like, whether they'll drop the WPU to some maybe 2 or 3% or none at all. That's yet to be seen. So that's what puts us a little bit on pause with our building our budgets, is we don't know if there's additional monies coming from the state. The instructions we're getting at this point is we just build the same level of budget that we had in fiscal year 20 for 21, and then we see if there's any additional revenue to come.
Yeah, and as part of the legislature's approval, I mean, there was this big plan, right? It was going to be, we're going to make education basically insulate. I mean, it was that we were going to, again, get growth dollars, and we were going to get, you know, basically hold education harmless. So it sounds like we're just going the other direction at this point.
A little bit. The legislation that passed last session was actually in two pieces. One was all of the statutory elements that you've described, where there would be essentially a hold harmless, that future years would be the same as the prior year plus growth. That's still in statute, but it's not triggered to go into effect until after the constitutional amendment, which allows two other groups to participate in income tax in their budgeting.
So
it's to be in place. It just, this is happening sooner than all of the pieces could be put into place and effective.
So are you telling me that this legislature is just touching the WPU for their special session? They're going to leave we're going to move forward with that ballot proposition in November?
Correct. So that's all in motion. So that was directions given to the lieutenant governor in the Senate joint resolution. So those gears will grind out and follow the course. Of course, it might be a tougher question on the ballot, but we'll see where that goes. I think in the long run, those are still the right pieces to have in place so that when we have situations like we're in right now, there is a solution. This is a solution that comes a little too late for the current situation. But in the future, I think it'll give us a good basis to move forward.
Okay.
One thing I am hearing is that enrollment growth will be funded for the upcoming school year. So it's the 25th or the fiscal year 20 base budget plus growth. So at least there's a little bit of money that we can anticipate in building our budgets.
Okay. Well, here we're pretty flat, though, aren't we, with enrollment?
Yeah. We're pretty flat, so we won't see significant money come that way.
All right. By law, budgets must be adopted by June 30th. Are we going to push that back at all? Or?
So at this point, there was a House bill that went into the special session that identified moving the dates back to July or even August. That bill was substituted, so those provisions don't exist right now. We're hoping that that comes back in the special session that starts here in probably half an hour, or at least in another special session that we're hearing that might take place in June. That would at least give us a better idea of how much to budget for from the state. At this point, we need to move forward with our regular adoption dates, and so we'll just do what we need to do.
Okay. So we're also in the midst of teacher negotiations. So are those, again, on pause until you find out what the legislature is going to do here?
So we're still in those discussions. I don't know that they're on pause. They might move a little slower as we wait for pieces of information, but the discussions are ongoing, and hopefully will be beneficial as we get to the end of the negotiation season.
Okay. So we've got money in the rainy day fund. We have almost $22 million in the capital fund. We should be fine, no?
Coming out of fiscal 20, we should be just fine. Going into fiscal year 21, we want to be prudent in how we use those dollars. The fund balances are available on a one-time basis. They're not really there to support ongoing costs. And so as we build budgets, we may dip into the one-time funds or those rainy day funds if we think there's a better revenue picture 12 months out or closer. So we just want to be careful as we look at those fund balances.
Yeah.
But they are there for these types of situations.
Sure. And House Bill 357, this would have allowed capital funds to help with operations?
Correct. There would have been an ability to transfer monies out of the capital fund into the operating budget. But again, that's contingent on the election item that will come up in November. So it's not available today. It probably won't even be available for the fiscal 21 year. So that would be a future safety valve.
Okay. In terms of staffing, are any issues there that you're looking at? I mean, with impacts to like the nonprofits, like the Education Foundation, are we talking about any cuts to programs or staff?
At this point, we're trying to maintain the fiscal 20 budget levels. So we're not anticipating any reductions in force that way. We do anticipate some enrollment decline, and so we were expecting to have fewer dollars come from the state because of that. But we've been able to manage all of our staffing assignments just through natural attrition, whether people were retiring or families were moving out of the area, things like that. So we've been able to maintain all of those people that are currently working within our reductions.
Okay. School board also spent a little bit of time on master planning. It sounds like we're moving full steam ahead.
We will keep the planning. We don't want to slow down the planning. We've talked about the master plan for a number of years. We don't want this to slow down the conversations. What the economic situation may do is it may tailor how we phase different elements of the master plan as we move forward. But we want to keep the conversations going. The future of learning is still the future, and we want to be ready for that as we move forward.
So what we're doing now is not the future of learning then, huh?
It may be, and it may not be. It's distance learning has some benefits. Some students thrive in that environment, and others really need that face-to-face personal relationship with the teacher. So I think we're learning that and trying to see how that will look into the future.
Okay. When's the what's kind of the next step in that process, master planning?
Yeah, for the master planning. Mm-hmm. The next step is we received feedback from the board last night, so the architects will go back and refine a couple of the options. And what we want to be able to do is get those refinements done so that the cost estimators can come in and put price tags to the different options. And then we would like to get that out into the community so they can start looking at that, understanding it, asking questions, and responding. We're still trying to figure out what the right mode is to do that, since we can't do a town hall as we traditionally have understood town halls or group gatherings to have a group conversation. We're exploring different ways to get that information out and the feedback into the district.
Yeah. For anybody listening in to Tuesday's meeting, they would have been as frustrated as we were. I mean, the audio was inaudible. Can the district do a better job of letting the public tune into their meetings? I mean, why aren't we using Zoom like everybody else?
you know, that I will take that feedback into the district and we'll see what we can do to make that a better experience for our community.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Just appreciate everybody's patience as we go through this transition of distance learning. We know that parents have been burdened with some extra responsibilities and having their children home for the majority of the day now instead of at school for the majority of the day. And just our hats are off to those families as they work through this. We really appreciate our teachers that are doing wonderful jobs in reaching out to the students and helping them stay in a learning situation as we go through this COVID-19 experience.
Okay. Todd Halbert, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's School District Business Administrator Todd Halbert. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW News Time now, 8:42. Well, two Park City brothers, one in 7th grade, the other in 9th, along with friends and their teacher, are using their expertise to help Intermountain Healthcare provide additional PPE for their staff. KPCW's Carolyn Murray has more on that.
Brad Gannon teaches 7th grade at Ecker Hill Middle School. He is the career and technical education teacher focusing on engineering and technology. During the stay-at-home orders, he's juggling a handful of projects to keep his class engaged and active in their learning. One of his students, Ecker Hill Middle School 7th grader Ben Knight, has been participating in the after-school program called TSA, or the Technology Student Association, which is where he learned to use 3D printers. Ben and his brother Jake have been making face shields, which will be used by medical personnel throughout Intermountain Healthcare facilities. It takes about 3 hours to print one of the pieces needed to build the face shield.
And then we had a few other friends who also had 3D printers printing along with us, and we were able to speed up the process. And essentially, the face shields are three parts. It's the band, which is 3D printed, the shield, which is clear plastic, and the strap in the back, which is nylon.
The boys reached out to IHC and were told the model they were producing would be acceptable as PPE for their medical staff. Brother Ben says they have 5 different friends who are using their own 3D printers to produce the bands, but Jake says production was still too slow, so they started a GoFundMe page and raised $2,500 to buy more supplies and to source a more efficient way to manufacture the bands.
So the only part that was holding us back was how long it took to print the band. So we found a company that does injection molding, and they can print about 2 bands every 10 seconds. So, and we bought, what did you buy? 1,000. We bought 1,000 of those, and we have well over 1,000 of the shields and well over 1,000 of the straps for the back. And we're actually going to assemble those today.
Gannon says he is using the school district's 3D printer to help with the production. He says they use a laser cutter to cut the face shields. While he's busy helping with printing and laser cutting, Gannon also has students who are working on their CTE projects. They include a CO2 balsa wood carved dragster that will have the capacity to go 60 miles per hour when it's all constructed. He plans to hold a remote drag race sometime before the end of the school year. He has a large group of kids working on a 3D architectural CAD project as well.
They're designing their ideal house. It needs to have at least 2 bedrooms, 1 bathroom, a kitchen. And they can do this digitally using a program called Tinkercad, which is an online three-dimensional design program. And they can also do it via paper, and they can also do it on another online program called Homestyler. It's a really cool architect interior design program that students can easily use.
According to Gannon, the TSA program, the printers and the laser cutter were funded through the Park City Education Foundation. A slideshow of the face shield project can be found on kpcw.org. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, as we know, the sudden closure of our winter ski season was a hit to so many, our resorts, our restaurants, and of course to our property managers. On the phone with a look at how the lodging industry is being impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, the owner of Park City Lodging and a member of the Lodging Association's Board of Directors, Rhonda Sedaris. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's just start by talking about the status of the lodging industry in Park City. Like many businesses, of course, it was hit hard. You still had a good 3 weeks left of reservations, I'm guessing, that went to zero in a day. How did that work? I mean, did people get their deposits back, or what is it just dependent on the property management company? Or
it depended on the property management company. A lot of travelers purchased trip insurance, but unfortunately, trip insurance didn't kick in because of force majeure. And now people don't trust trip insurance. We gave back 100% of the money, and we're still doing that. We didn't take any cancellation fees. We first asked if the client would be willing to move their reservation forward. And if we got pushback, then we just gave them back their money. And I tell you, it went a long way just in building that trust.
Yeah. We talk a little bit about that in a sec, but tell me, explain to me, I mean, when you don't, when you buy trip insurance and you don't get it, what's force majeure? I mean, is it just under the Act of God clause?
It's a pandemic. It's under the Act of God. It's extraordinary circumstances. I know that some people in the East, what they did was if you purchased trip insurance, even though trip insurance didn't kick in, they would refund your money. If you didn't purchase trip insurance, if you didn't purchase anything, then it was 100% cancellation. I know here in Park City, a lot of property managers did not give refunds, or they didn't give 100% refunds, but most of the hotels, I think, did, because hotels have more of a relaxed cancellation policy.
Yeah, so what kind of money are we talking about? I mean, how much do people put up for a deposit?
Most of it was paid in full. We lost a bunch of groups. We lost Math Camp that's coming in. They usually come in July. They've just canceled. We've lost most of our international travelers that, because they book early. We give them a special to book early. So they book, you know, months, 9 months in advance. Most of them have canceled. You know, international, they don't want to travel long haul. And I doubt that they're going to come to the United States this year. That's what most of the European travel markets are saying. Luckily for us, this is the slow time of year. It's probably hitting harder for the hotels because they do corporate groups. And Bill Malone was talking about the hit that the chamber took. The hospitality was the hardest hit sector in Summit County. We were hit the hardest. And I know we lost close to $1 million. I think we gave back $955,000, which is it's a big hit. It's a very big hit. Our owners are very supportive of it, though. We haven't had any pushback. You have to be compassionate.
Yeah.
You have to build trust.
Yeah. And in terms of that, I mean, it's you guys are really in the same situation, I guess, as the restaurants and the retail and everything else, right? I mean, you're just closed down.
We're closed down. We've blocked out our calendars for until June 1st. We may revisit that after the stabilization working group comes up and Summit County, if they allow. But we will not open up our calendars for short-term stays. If we do, it'll be more for staycations. You know, if you've got to work from home and you need to get away from your kids, come rent a condo from us. We have very few owners who are here in town. The ones that are here in town, we're pretty much here. They've been stuck here for a while. I think we've only got one owner who came after the resorts closed, and they were traveling to here anyway. They were on a road trip, and they just haven't left. But we're not allowing any nightly rentals. For the foreseeable future, anyway.
So who's representing lodging on the stabilization working group?
Myself and Rob Aday from Abode and Chris Eagleton. And then Ginger Reese is our liaison between the county. So we had our first meeting yesterday. We have another meeting today. you know, there's, it's just, what do we do? How do we open back up, and what are our cleaning standards? What are our check-in standards? And we can make them, my cleaning standards and my check-in standards will probably be more strict than the counties, because if they put something out based on a hotel, we're a little different. We'll do remote check-in. We'll do advanced registration with DocuSign. We assign them a code. We won't go into the property while they're there unless it's an emergency. We won't clean the property for a minimum of 48 hours after departure. We'll open up the doors, windows, and turn on fans. It takes us about an hour and a half longer to clean now because of the disinfecting and sanitation that we do.
Wow. Well, kind of looking ahead, so summer is still very much up in the air at this point, huh?
Summer's up in the air. We Triple Crown has not canceled yet, which is surprising, but that's in July as well, you know, towards the middle of the end of July. They haven't canceled yet, and that's a drive market, so that may still happen. Summer's down pretty far.
And looking ahead to even like Christmas and Sundance, huge, you know, huge lodging totals there. I'm sure you even probably have reservations on the book for those events.
We have quite a few reservations on the books right now for Christmas and Sundance. Like I said, our international travelers, which that was a lot of December and January, they've canceled. Leisure travel should return quicker than business travel. So we're lucky in that respect that we live in a resort. There's pent-up demand. And I think everybody will probably just change their marketing strategy and target more of a drive market. And the drive market used to be within Utah or maybe into Wyoming. And now the drive market's looking more like 15 hours as opposed to 6 or 7 hours. So we'll do some geo-targeting, and I think that the Lodging Association will do the same thing. We get a grant from Summit County Restaurant Tax, and we got them last year to promote mountain biking, and we had to cancel our first couple of media fams, but what we're going to do is we're going to create virtual tours on mountain bikes with GoPros and drones and try to promote some of that. And there are folks now who have never even been mountain biking, and they're experiencing it. We'll sell more staycations, like I said, you know, here in Park City. We do have owners that live locally, and they've been going to stay in their condos because they just need to get out of their house. They just need to change pace.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Park City Lodging had put sent out letters to all of its property owners asking if they would be willing to donate their units to first responders or other community needs. What kind of response did you get to that?
We had a great response, and it was just so heartwarming to some of the comments that we got. So we asked our owners if they would donate their properties. Park City Lodging would pay for the cleaning for first responders, healthcare workers, and victims of domestic abuse. And we had an overwhelming response. I just got more responses Friday that the owners were thinking maybe they were going to come out, and now that they're not going to come out, we can have it. We haven't used very many, we haven't used any for the healthcare providers because they've, Park City's got a relationship with, the NAC, and University of Utah hasn't had a need yet. But it's still out there. But we have unfortunately, had to house some folks for Peace House, and we're not telling anybody where we're putting them, and we're not, you know, we give them secret parking, no parking passes, just because we don't want them to be identified. And Park City Lodging's paying for the cleaning, which has, and my owners are great. My owners have been great. They also donate for an annual event, Image Reborn, for breast cancer survivors. So the owners are really good, and I think it helps them feel more connected to the community.
Yeah. So what's the sense out there? I mean, when do we start welcoming back people to Park City? I mean, is this you just waiting for direction from the county health department?
Well, I think that mid to late summer, it should pick up with fall, people starting to maybe travel a little further, depending on if there's a second round of the virus and how people feel, you know, what their comfort zone is. I think being in a resort town, having a lot of outdoor activities, mountain biking and golfing and hiking and things like that, and being able to, for me, being able to be in a private home or a private condominium and not having to walk through a lobby is advantageous.
Sure.
You know, they can continue to hunker down here. I think winter is when we're going to really start seeing some folks coming back, you know, when they can ski and do some other things. You know, Zika recovered within 90 days of when the pandemic ended. I don't know that that'll, or Zika, I don't know that that will happen to us, but that would be great.
Yeah. Finally, I heard a handful of hotels that were continuing to operate during these last 6 weeks. I think they've been warned now by the health department to shut down. But does Lodging Association, I mean, what's their reaction to these kind of rogue businesses?
Well, we don't regulate them. You know, I mean, everybody can do what they want to do. You know, we hope that people do the right thing. I know that some folks already had some marketing in place and was triggered to be sent out right in the middle of this pandemic. So I don't know what some of those messages were or what they've been, but you're right. Some lodging properties are actively marketing for people to come. You know, and there is a sense of travel shaming on social media. So I don't know that people will want to come, but we can't control that, what our members are doing.
Okay. I've got to leave it there. I appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie. Have a great day.
That's Rhonda Sedaris, again, owner of Park City Lodging and a member of the Lodging Association's Board of Directors. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, a new scaled back schedule for the Park City Summit County Transit System was announced just last week. Summit County Council members heard a few brief remarks about the system's current financial outlook and its operations. County Council Member Kim Carson and County Manager Tom Fisher recently attended a meeting of JTAB, that's the Joint Transportation Advisory Board. Fisher said that both the county and Park City are looking at the decreased sales taxes to support transit, the revenue projections, as well as the possibility that they can get aid from the Federal CARES Act.
And what that does to us, if there isn't any federal aid that comes in, it would be a huge adjustment to our system that we'd have to make. Now, that could be a blessing or a curse, depending on how you look at it. But the long and short of it is that, at least what I took out of it, is that keeping current services as we've known them over the last few years is going to be a difficult task, especially with staffing. Not that it can't be done yet, I don't know that, but it is going to be difficult. And then enhanced services or doing anything more than what we're already doing is going to, I can't even predict that right now.
The buses that are operating with new measures to maintain the health of both drivers and passengers. It's KPCW Park City.